Hello there, you. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I'm in Salford. It's Richie Allen with you this morning. How are you? Are you well? Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast, the papers. Let's go to the front pages of the dailies, the broadsheets, the tabloids. We're starting with The Guardian today. The headline, former Supreme Court judges add voices to calls for Israeli arms ban. So The Guardian is claiming an exclusive this morning. It says that more than 600 lawyers, academics and retired judges have written to the government to say that you're probably, in fact you are, breaching international law by continuing to arm Israel. It's an exclusive because The Guardian managed to obtain a copy of the letter. Now, I'll definitely come back to it. Also on the front page of The Guardian is Netanyahu faces global outcry over killing of aid workers. So The Guardian going big on the situation in Gaza, the murder of the seven aid workers on Monday. Was it Monday or Tuesday? And now a letter that has been signed by 600 legal experts and academics telling the government you're breaking the law by arming Israel. The I, Gaza plunges into new aid crisis. There is a horrendous photograph on the front page of The I, taken, seemingly photographed by a drone or a camera attached to a drone. And it is a sky view of Gaza, which represents something out of some post-apocalyptic, you can imagine some post-apocalyptic sci-fi movie. Levelled, absolutely destroyed is Gaza. And The I paper says that the murder of these aid workers will plunge Gaza into a new aid crisis because charities are basically suspending their operations there in fear of their own workers falling foul of the Israeli Defence Forces who murdered these kitchen charity aid workers earlier this week. That's The I paper. The Metro, intolerable is the headline. And there's a photograph of the three British workers who were killed in this attack. John Chapman, James Henderson and James Kirby. As they'd been working as part of the World Central Kitchen Charity security team. These lads had been trained in the British Army. Intolerable is the headline. What did Sunak say? He said he was appalled, didn't he? The Prime Minister. I'm appalled, he said. And then did nothing. I'm appalled. But then did nothing. The Times. Blood tests to help spot Alzheimer's years earlier. So the Times is leading with what it calls a potentially game-changing NHS Alzheimer's trial, which will drastically improve, well, not drastically, it's not a drastic thing. If it's true, it will wonderfully improve early diagnosis rates for people who are going to develop Alzheimer's. That's the Times. Also on the front page of the Times, PM refuses to rule out halting arms sales to Israel. And there's another big story in the Times today. The story is Hunt forecast to lose his seat in 1997-style Labour landslide. So a new poll of polls suggests that Labour will win a 150-seat majority in the next election, which will either be in June, maybe it's less likely now, maybe in the autumn, but it will have to happen, of course, this year. And the Times is saying that Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, is likely to lose his seat, as is Penny Mordaunt and a number of cabinet ministers. The poll suggesting that it's going to be an absolute wipeout for the Tories. Go on, I'll say it. You're saying it. I'll say it. It doesn't matter. The Sun, Rishi, I'll quit Euro Court is the headline. This is about stopping the boats, of course. The never-ending saga of small boats crossing the channel with migrants. Migrants who paid gangs, criminal gangs, to get them on the channel and get them to Dover or to other parts of the southern UK coastline. I'll quit the European Convention on Human Rights if it helps stop deportation flights to Rwanda, says Sunak, because that's the plan. The government's ludicrous plan is to take people arriving in small boats and stick them on a plane to Rwanda. It's ridiculous, but anyway. Daily Express, same story, PM, we will quit Eurocourt if Rwanda flights are blocked. You might know that the House of Lords has sent the bill twice now back to the House of Commons. It passed the House of Commons, this Rwanda flight plan. The House of Lords has said no, there are problems with it, and sent it back to the House of Commons with recommendations, changes, recommendations for changes. So it's bouncing around like ping pong between the upper and lower chambers. And Sunak is saying, look, if it does eventually pass the House of Lords, and if it does receive royal assent, and then the European Court of Human Rights tries to intervene, I'll quit the European Court of Human Rights. He's a muppet. The Daily Mail, MPs caught up in naked honey trap sex sting. Jeffrey Epstein might be dead, but there are lots of Jeffrey Epsteins operating in the shadows, entrapping public servants, politicians, leaders, bankers, captains of industry. They're out there, these people, to snare people, to use them, to compromise them. So the Daily Mail says at least a dozen MPs, the staff of those MPs, and journalists have been targeted by a suspected spear phishing attack or attacks. First reported by Politico, some of these attacks were flirtatious messages and nude photographs sent to these MPs, their staff and journalists. Entrapment type stuff, that, isn't it? Sex sting, says the Daily Mail. 'Twas ever thus. Financial Times, Google looks at launching premium AI-powered search behind paywall. So is your, I don't know, you might use Google. A lot of people use Google. I use Google, I suppose. I don't prioritise Google over any other search engine. It's just the one that's built into my computer. I suppose I could change it at any time. The Financial Times says Google is developing new paid-for premium search features which would be powered by generative AI. The paper reports, basically. So they're going to get a new premium, very quick search service that might dig up results that maybe your current search engine doesn't, but you'll pay a premium for it. And the Daily Telegraph, judges to look at soft terms for deprived offenders. We'll get into that. The Sentencing Council has recommended two judges they consider more lenient sentences for people, offenders from deprived or difficult backgrounds. We'll come back to it. The Daily Star headline, Excalibur Arise, is the headline. Huge quest to find King Arthur's lost sword, Excalibur. Divers and tech experts embarking on a lake-scouring quest to find the fabled sword of King Arthur. Those, the front pages of the papers, today, April 4th, Thursday. Let's have a look then inside. So that Telegraph lead story, judges to look at softer sentences for deprived criminals. What's going on? Well, they've been told to consider more lenient sentences for offenders who come from difficult or deprived backgrounds. I don't think they've put a measure on this. You know, a definitive explanation, a definition of what is a deprived or a difficult background in terms of whether they take into account the household income, maybe. Access to public services in that area, I don't know. But the Sentencing Council, the official body responsible for setting guidelines for judges and magistrates, has for the first time spelt out mitigating factors relating to disadvantage that courts should consider before passing sentence. This is kind of bizarre, weird. I don't know if it's dangerous, stupid anyway. I grew up in Ballybeg in Waterford, and I'm very proud of Ballybeg in Waterford. Some of the best people I've ever met came from Ballybeg and live in Ballybeg. It's a working class housing estate. And I suppose it would have been frowned upon. It had a reputation, Ballybake, like some council estates do. And they often acquire these reputations because, you know, in a community of 2,000 people, you might have one or two or three families. You might have one or two villains in the area, and an area acquires a reputation, doesn't it? But Ballybeg was a fantastic place to grow up. It was a very safe place to grow up, full of very young families, working at Waterford Crystal or in the nearby industrial estate. But it had a very undeserved reputation, okay? So I don't get this. What does it mean that somebody who commits a murder or a violent crime of some sort, that they take into consideration that the person had disadvantages because of where he grew up? I think it's insane, to be honest with you. Where does that end? You know, murder is murder. I don't know if that's snobbish. Snobbish is one way of putting it. It's beyond snobbishness, isn't it? Patronising. This idea that, you know, you're less likely to adhere to a moral code of living. You might be less likely to grow up a well-rounded, decent human being because of the area you grew up in. I think it's ridiculous. Anyway, the Lord Chancellor, the Justice Secretary, Alex Chalk, says this is patronising and inaccurate, and it risks making poor schooling and poverty excuses for offenders to commit crimes. Yes, and I bet you if a proper study was done on this, you know, coming from areas where public services are struggling, where the areas are a bit deprived, where there might be a little bit more crime, I doubt there's any evidence to show that people emerging from these places are more likely to commit crimes because of the experiences of growing up in those places, and therefore this must be taken into consideration when handing down a sentence. I think it's ridiculous. Esther McVeigh, who heads up a group called the Blue Collar Conservatives, says it is extremely patronising, not least to working class communities, to law-abiding working class communities. Mad. Mad stuff. So let's go to The Guardian exclusive then. Former Supreme Court judges say UK arming Israel breaches international law. What took these 600 judges and King's councils? What took them? And this is not unfair. The Israeli government has been committing crimes against humanity, against the people of Palestine, for 75, 80 years, and has been using weaponry given to Israel by the United Kingdom, by the United States, by France. You know, so what took them? Has it really come to the 7 aid workers killed earlier this week? Because Israel has been doing it forever and using weaponry, as I said, manufactured in this country and handed to Israel by various governments down the years. Anyway, 3 former Supreme Court justices, including the court's former president, Lady Hale, among 600 lawyers, more than 600, academics and retired senior judges, warning the UK government is, not risks, is breaching international law by continuing to arm Israel. In a letter to Sunak, the PM, the signatories, who include former Court of Appeal judges and more than 60 King's councils, so barristers, right? They say the present situation in Gaza is catastrophic, and that given the International Court of Justice finding that there is a plausible risk of genocide being committed, the UK is legally obliged to prevent it. Now, this is significant. Legally obliged to act to prevent it. It's a 17-page letter. The Guardian obtained it. It's a legal opinion sent last night and says, quote, "While we welcome the increasingly robust calls by your government for a cessation of fighting and the unobstructed entry to Gaza of humanitarian assistance, simultaneously to continue the sale of weapons and weapon systems to Israel, and to maintain threats of suspending UK aid to UNRWA falls significantly short of your government's obligations under international law. Falls significantly short of your government's obligations under international law. The Guardian writes it comes as Conservative MPs piled pressure on Rishi Sunak to act after 7 international aid workers were killed on Monday. Party sources believe that David Cameron, the Foreign Secretary, has been pushing for the government to harden its approach to Israel, but that he has been met with resistance from Downing Street. The letter calls for the government to work towards a permanent ceasefire and to impose sanctions, quote, upon individuals and entities who have made statements inciting genocide against the Palestinians. So this is significant. The Labour Party has called on the government this morning to publish this letter, this advice given it by 600 legal scholars, barristers, former judges and academics. We want to see the advice you're given, says Labour. And that one, this story, I should say, is going to run and run today. That's theguardian.com/UK. The Times. Police making up hate crimes as they go over J.K. Rowling's storm. This is interesting. Speaking of running and running, this story has got legs, hasn't it? So this is about the Police Scotland kind of, not spat really, but J.K. Rowling earlier in the week when the new hate crime laws came into force on Monday in Scotland. J.K. Rowling said, well, I'll test these laws. And she named a number of high-profile trans people and said they were men, so misgendered them and dared the Scottish police to come and arrest her. But the Scottish police said, no, we won't be doing that at all. We won't be coming and arresting you. Now, because of that refusal to come and speak to J.K. Rowling, they are being accused, are Police Scotland, of making the rules up as they go. Because Murdo Fraser, who is a Scottish Conservative MSP, he was logged by Scotland Police, by Scottish Police, as committing a non-crime hate incident after he shared a post on Twitter in November critical of the Scottish Government's non-binary action plan. He said choosing to identify as non-binary is as valid as choosing to identify as a cat. That's pretty appropriate, I would have said. So pretty harmless, right? If you say you're non-binary, you might as well say you identify as a cat. Now, when he tweeted this, somebody obviously complained, and the Scottish police logged the incident as a non-crime hate incident, but haven't done it, because they said that J.K. Rowling's comments did not reach the threshold for a non-crime hate incident. But Murdo Fraser's comment about non-binary did. So the Police Scotland are being accused of making things up as they go along. Callum Steele, the former General Secretary of Scotland's Police Federation, said that in the last 24 hours, the number of hate complaints recorded by Police Scotland was more than 3,000. It's basket case stuff, this. It really is. It just is, isn't it? Basket case. How did we get here? Well, I think we have an idea, don't we? I won't read much of this, but Peter Hitchens has written an interesting opinion piece in today's Daily Mail, in the paper, and you can read it online, but I think you might have to subscribe to the Mail's new Plus service to read it. And as I've told you 1,000 times, excuse me, the Richie Allen Show subscribes to everything. Because I need to read this stuff. Mandatory ID cards, a sinister European tradition that gives the state immense power. Why has Hitchens written this? Well, because Lord Blunkett, that's David Blunkett, you might remember he was Home Secretary under Tony Blair in the late 1990s. Blunkett has called for the reintroduction of ID cards in this country. We did have ID cards in the UK for a time after the Second World War, but they were scrapped. Now, Blunkett and his old pal Tony Blair are desperate for ID cards to come in. Blunkett says it might be one way of dealing with illegal immigration. Now, that is a load of old bollocks, of course. Right. So Hitchens has written about the whole issue and the problems around ID cards. And he says it would be really useful to the authorities if we all had barcodes tattooed on our foreheads at birth. After all, as they've said many times, if you've nothing to fear and have done nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide. But there is much more to life than the convenience of state bureaucrats sitting behind desks. My guess is that even if we did submit to such indignities, says Hitchens, we would still spend a huge part of our lives queuing to get through officious security checks and filling in forms. So he first of all eviscerates the idea that if you have an ID card, and of course if we did, it would be contained on your phone, your smartphone. It would make life a lot easier. It wouldn't, says Hitchens, it just would not, right? And then he goes on to talk about, in the article, about how Labour tried to bring in ID cards 20 years ago, a supposed cure-all for our problems. He said, in the same way, he says, Hitchens, nobody can explain what use they would actually be. For certain, they were less than no use at all when they were imposed on this country at the outbreak of World War II in September 1939. I have combed the archives for any evidence that they ever helped uncover a spy ring or anything of that kind. And he couldn't find any evidence. He says ID cards would, of course, have been very useful to the Nazis, had they ever arrived, in rounding up Jews and other persons they wanted to kill. And he goes on to cite the case of a Jewish furrier, Meyer Rubinstein, prosecuted in 1950 for never having obtained a card, presumably because he feared that putting such an obviously Jewish name on a national register would be his death warrant. This was in the 50s in the UK. Meyer Rubinstein was prosecuted for not having an ID card. And he was thinking back to Nazi Germany and thought, well, if my name is on a national register and if they ever come for the Jews in the UK, they'll come for me. And he goes on to write, does Hitchens, about a recent experience of COVID restrictions, weird surveillance of dissenting journalists, including him, and the police sunbathing squad, you know, out there scouring cities and towns and hillsides looking for people who were breaching COVID regulations. He says such things could easily happen again in modern Britain with added helicopters, CCTV cameras and internet snooping, and this would be made much easier if everybody had an ID card and if it was contained on their phone. So it's an interesting piece by Hitchens saying that ID cards are sinister and dangerous and give huge powers of surveillance to governments. He says Blunkett's argument that we all accept specific forms of ID anyway is a feeble one. Each of these, from national insurance number to driving license or credit card, is for a particular purpose. The holders of our private information have it for one reason and one reason alone, not to use it as they will. But if you centralise it in a single card, the institutions of the state then have immense power. Hitchens writing in the Mail, as I said. It's good. And he's right. The Daily Telegraph has a very interesting interview with Lionel Shriver. The headline is Lionel Shriver, Transgenderism is a Social Mania. So she's been interviewed by The Telegraph, chatting about her latest novel, which is called Mania. And she digs in, it's a fictional novel, apparently, but it's very much based on the fiction, things that have been happening in recent years in the world. So she digs into the way social manias have come to dominate the world. They're insidious, she tells The Telegraph. From the clamour for COVID lockdowns, she calls it the biggest public health mistake in history and the biggest economic mistake in history, to the response to the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Shriver says they were marching for George Floyd down the streets of Korea. They don't have any black people. This is South Korea. This was just social contagion. She talks about global warming. Quote, anyone who is not on side with climate change is evil. So she's written this novel, which goes back in time to depict an alternative history. It begins in 2011. She says, Shriver, I think that's when things started really going to shit. So the book is a dystopian satire, dark and funny in uncomfortable ways, about how society is radically transformed by the fictional mental parody movement. Fantastic. Very good. So Shriver, writing a book about a dystopian reality based on some of the things that are going on at the moment, giving a very interesting interview to The Telegraph. Sadly for you, well, maybe not. Maybe you do subscribe to The Telegraph. You do have to subscribe to the newspaper to read it. Interesting one in The Times, if you've ever fancied being a pilot, right? If you've ever fancied it. Could you be a pilot? EasyJet's reaction test could give you wings. So this is a new test created by EasyJet. You can do it online to test your sense of direction and your reaction time. And depending on how well you're doing it, the company might be in touch with you about obtaining a pilot's license. But one of the interesting things about this is that the test has been generated as part of EasyJet's plans to attract people, wait for it, from underrepresented backgrounds to its pilot training program. So is this woke bollocks? Well, maybe it isn't, maybe. Maybe it's not. EasyJet commissioned some research, and the research found that 57% of people believe, erroneously, that you need a university qualification to be a commercial pilot. That isn't true. 80% of people believe you need 20/20 vision to be a commercial pilot. That isn't true either. The study found that twice as many men as women considered becoming a pilot. Tackling gender stereotyping within aviation has been a long-standing mission for EasyJet, and I'm excited to be a part of this latest campaign to allow people to get a real insight into what skills are really important to the job, so we can encourage more women into the profession. And that's Captain Sarah Ackerley speaking to The Times. So it's not woke bollocks, really. It's an interesting one. Too many people think they're not qualified or wouldn't be in a position to learn to be a pilot and then to go on, obtain your wings, your license, and go and get a job in the industry. A lot of misconceptions out there, EasyJet is saying. Now, I know a pilot. Her name is Anne. Commercial pilot, lovely woman. It's been a long time since I spoke with Anne. She came on the Richie Allen radio show a few years ago. And Anne told me some funny stories that turned out to be true about, you know, gender stereotyping. You know the comedian Jim Davison? This is true. I think it was an EasyJet plane. Davison got on a plane one day, I don't know where. Maybe London, maybe not, maybe New York, but more than likely it was in London. And there he was on the plane, maybe flying business class, maybe not, I don't know. But he was near the front in any case. So old Jim Davison, sitting down, the doors to the cockpit were ajar. And Davison noticed there was a couple of women there. And he tapped a flight, this is absolutely true, he tapped a flight attendant on the shoulder and he said, "Who's flying the plane?" The flight attendant said, I don't know the name of the pilot now, but, well, it's Captain Tracy Moore and co-pilot, First Officer Mary Maguire. And Jim Davison said that he wanted to get off the plane, and he did. He left the plane because he was aghast that a pair of women were at the controls. That is hilarious. That is deep-seated, deep-rooted misogyny, isn't it? Funny enough, after Anne told me this story some years ago, I got on a plane. I think it was in the airport in Amsterdam, I think, coming back to Manchester. And I laughed out loud and embarrassed myself because people were looking at me. When the same thing, the cockpit doors were ajar. I wasn't in business class, but I was up near the front of the plane. And there, lo and behold, there were women on the flight deck. I just started laughing out loud, you know. Anyway, so EasyJet says you might be able to become a pilot. Take our online test. And from what I understand, obtaining a commercial pilot's license is very expensive. Maybe the airlines will subsidise some of that, maybe, or organise a cheap loan if they think you're good enough. I don't know, in any case. Look, that is it for the papers this Thursday morning. Thank you for listening to it. I suppose I'll talk with you later on, depending on whether you're interested or not. The Richie Allen Radio Show will be live at 4 o'clock UK time, as usual, this Thursday. I need to drink some water. I'm drying up, so I am. Until later, from the BBG, it is Arrivederci. Bye now.